Welcome to the Sanity Project Podcast, the place for internet technology professionals whose work-life balance plan has imploded. We are here to provide solutions that will help the IT pro live a sane, healthy, and prosperous life. Here's your host, Joanne Victoria.
Hi, I'm Joanne Victoria, the I Know What Works coach, and I'm the host of the Sanity Project Podcast. I partner with IT pros in the telecommunications, technology, entertainment, and mass media industries whose work-life balance plan has imploded and who want more success, more confidence, more fun, and more inner peace. The Sanity Project Podcast is a platform for experts in the personal development and IT communities to share their wisdom, expertise, and solutions that will help the IT pro live a sane, healthy, and prosperous life. And we have a guest today that is going to support that. Our guest today is Carla Brandao. Carla Brandao is the author of How to Earn the Gift of Discretionary Effort, a 21st century leadership book. She is a thought leader on how to create a culture in your organization, enabling employees to give discretionary effort on a regular basis. Carla is the CEO of Workplace Power Institute, a management consulting firm with expertise in strengthening the touch points between managers and employees. Her clients include corporations such as Coca-Cola Enterprises and Panasonic, as well as the EPA and the FDA government agencies. Carla is a certified speaking professional known as a CSP and earned designation given by the National Speakers Association. And welcome to the podcast, Carla Brandao.
Thank you so much, Joanne. It's a pleasure to be here with you.
I am so glad you're here because I want to talk about what discretionary effort is and how it strengthens the relationship between managers and employees. Can you talk about that today?
Absolutely. We've spent about 5 years researching this new book and talking about discretionary effort. And so if you have a hard time saying that word, discretionary effort, I've practiced it for 5 years.
Yes, that's an insight to our pre-talk people when you're listening. I had a hard time
right.
saying discretionary effort. Oh, it's coming easier now. Here it is. Yes.
Yes, yes, what you say. And I think some of the reasons to talk about discretionary effort, it's because I've done a lot of time management training, and you talk in there about discretionary time. And discretionary time is time to do what you want to do. So what we want is when you have discretionary time, we want you to give discretionary effort. And probably it's appropriate to define what we mean by discretionary effort. Would that work for you, Joanne?
I think that's a great start because our audience needs as much clarity as possible so that what you say following just fits right into their brains.
Good, good, good. Well, people can be hired, and you think you've got this jewel of a person, and you do have a jewel of a person, but they have to be developed. And one of the things you learn as you work with your employees is that they can give you the minimum effort, or they can give you extra effort. So what discretionary effort means is the difference between what they have to do to get a paycheck, or the minimum effort that they have to give, and what they are capable of contributing. And if you look at them and analyze them, they're probably capable of contributing a lot more than you ever think. And I had a great experience when I was doing some work for the Army Research Institute down at Fort Benning. Mm-hmm. I had lunch with Seward Smith, who was the head of that Army Research Institute. And he said that he could bring young people into his office and explain a job to them, you know, explain a new project and say, this is what we need. And they could get real excited about it. And then he gave them these words and he said, if you make this fly, if you do this research and you make it fly, I'll give you all the credit. But if it flops, I'll take the rap. And what he did with those words is give them freedom, freedom to go out and explore and freedom to try. He gave them so many things that come to play in the discretionary effort pyramid. And if you go to, WW Earn the Gift, you can see the pyramid on the front of the website there. But what we basically say in our pyramid is that And this is similar to Maslow's pyramid. You'll recognize the difference immediately, and it's because it's so valid in what we're trying to do in the 21st century. And Joanne mentioned these touch points, the touch points with between the manager and the employee. And we talk about touch points, and then let me do, say that, Joanne, and then I'll go back to the pyramid for
sure.
just a second. But the touch points mean that when you are working with your employee, every conversation you have with them or every email or whatever you have with them is a touch point. And you want that touch point to be positive. And this, another experience I had at a conference I was at recently, I was talking to a gentleman and told him about my book. And he was phenomenal because he said, well, you know, I get new managers and I take them these leadership books. And they say, oh, I don't have time to read that. And he looks it straight in the eye. You've heard that before, right, Joanne?
Oh, yeah. Oh, no, right. Oh, my God. Okay.
So they're trying to do it from intuition, which helps. But it's really great to be able to have a few perspectives in your head, you know, a few principles in your head as you start to manage people. Because oftentimes people are thrown into management without knowing what they're doing, basically, you know. It's like the salesperson that's promoted to be sales manager and then they don't have any sales left.
I know.
And the best salesman.
Yeah, and the first thing they try to do is change everything.
Right.
New managers come into a position and the first thing they try to do is change the procedures as opposed to, let's see what's happening now, let's see what's going on, which is a rule as far as I'm concerned. Check in, you know, have your own touch point
right.
with what's going on. Touch base with... You know, and they never do. They just come in and say, you know, this is, you know, I'm just going to dig out everybody and everything, and you're going to all, and then everybody scatters and runs for cover.
Right. How well said. Because we know that people will join a good company, but then they leave because they can't get along with their manager. And that's because the touch points aren't working. And this man that I met at the conference, when they tell him that they don't have time to read these leadership books, he looks them in the eye and says, if you don't read these and learn what's in them, you will always be the boss nobody likes. And they will follow the leader. So, I mean, I thought that was a brilliant statement.
It is.
Because what he's saying there is that you want to move from management. There's a lot of things that you have to do in management, like, you know, make sure they're in on time, make sure they're, you know, on track for the project, all these tactical things that managers have to do. But a leader inspires them. And when we talk about inspiring and improving those touch points, we talk about what's in the leadership model or the discretionary effort leadership model, which has several levels to it. And when we were doing this research, we found that almost every company had at the bottom of their quote pyramid or the bottom of their mission and values and all of those things that they write, they had integrity. And so we decided that that was truly the basis of how these touch points work. The employee has to know that you're being upfront, honest with them, and authentic. And so when they can trust you, then you move up to the first level of that pyramid, which is safety and security, which relates to your Maslow pyramid.
Mm-hmm.
And why we say that is because if you're threatening them every single day in your touch point, you know, if you don't get that done, I'm going to have to dock your pay or I'm going to have to fire you. They're not safe because they're always feeling like they're having to watch their back. They're not free to give you discretionary effort. They're barely scraping by on the minimum that they can do. I don't know. Does that kind of make sense?
That's absolutely been my experience with employees and contractors. Contractors have it worse, of course, because they're treated like fourth class citizens in most large corporations, even though they do make up over 60% of the workers in these large companies. But there is no authenticity. There is no transparency. You have to fight your way upstream. And usually the people who are in management, and I say that in quotes at this specific time, should not be in management. When they take somebody from the group and make them a manager without any conversations, without any interviewing to see if they have any management skills, any lead toward that, at let alone being a leader, for heaven's sakes, they're just screwed. Everybody is just, you know, it looks like an octopus. You've got eight arms going in eight different directions. And that's what these managers slash leader wannabes look like. And the team looks the same way.
Oh, that's a very good comment. And I love that analogy, or I can visualize that octopus in my head. Because several, you know, they'll probably have seven or eight people all pulling on them, and they're wondering how to prioritize. They're wondering how to do all of that thing. So they never quite get to that leadership and inspire. And by the way, it's like, maybe we could make another analogy here. When you walk into a high school class, you may know everything there is to know about biology or geometry or history or whatever, but did you ever learn classroom management?
Well, it's interesting that you say that, because I had a guest who is a professor emeritus in Georgia, and he spoke about how he goes into a classroom and essentially gives the class over to the students. He empowers them, but he doesn't give up his authority. And he has a great techniques for that. His name is Cleet, CLETEBULACH. And you can listen to one of his podcasts on my various pages. And you will see how we've aligned it to leadership, because that's the way it is. Because he said, again, most teachers, i.e. leaders, i.e. managers, come in and try to change everything from the get-go. He says, then they lose the connection with the group, be it a classroom or a team working. There is no, they've lost
well said.
It. You know, they lose the connection.
Well said. So they've lost the touch point with them when they do that. And so they have to make them safe. But the point that is unique to what I'm trying to discuss or put across the touch points is that you have to make them psychologically safe as well. So not just physically safe in the building and secure from people who would come in and try to harm them, but you also have to give them psychological safety, meaning that when you have conversations with them, and this is critical for your touch points, what's your body language like? Are you really listening to that person when they're talking to you, when they're giving you ideas, or even more important, when they're trying to tell you something is wrong? Are you letting them surface the truth? And do you give them the psychological safety to be able to surface that truth? And so that leads us into the next rung, or you might say the next level on the pyramid, which is social acceptance. And I like to talk about accepting people as is. When you hire them, you do the best job you can. You know, I mean, you use all these assessments and you talk to their people. You look at people who have hired them before and you look at their resumes. And lo and behold, then you find out that this person has strengths that you hired them for, but they also have limitations. And I like to liken this to going to get a new appliance. And you see this refrigerator you really like in the scratch and dent section, maybe, and it's got this dent on the side, and you say, you know, I'm going to put that against the wall. No one will see it. So you get great value for what you put into that refrigerator. And the same is way with people. If we could just accept that all of us have strengths and we want those strengths on the team, and you want to be able to see the different strengths they have, but everyone's human and they have these little scratches or dents somewhere. So if I'm a manager and I know those and I have these touch points, I want a touch point on their strengths. I want to give them projects that help their strengths blossom, that helps their strengths, you know, shine where they can really do the job well. And I want to take steps to minimize some of those limitations. So I accept them as is. And then the key here for managers is that you want to help them grow. And I would say that means training. It also, you want to give them a wide variety of experiences. You want to help them learn. You want to help them take on new things that are exciting to them and give them jobs that make them excited, that have real meaning. And each person, as you get to know that person and as you talk to them, and by the way, you need to get to know them as individuals. Those touch points need to be personal with that individual. Then you start to set the stage for them to give you discretionary effort. And the third thing that you need to do is give them rational alignment. And what this means is that you need to intellectually let them align with where your department's going. And we're assuming that the mission, the values, the vision, and all that is set by the company team at the top.
You know, but that's a great assumption, but excuse me for interrupting, but not always.
Yeah, go ahead.
We assume we would like to think that the company, the masterheads, whoever they are, living in some sky room somewhere, have created, with their own team, have created the mission and the values of the company, but they don't trickle down as well because they pretty much stop at a high level in a lot of companies. Smaller companies are easier because you can point it out right away. You can point out, okay, these are your values, you're not living them in whatever verbiage you use. But when you have a large company with millions of people, almost millions of people working for you, and, you know, I shall not name the companies, or hundreds of thousands at the very least, those values can get screwed up if the managers are not aware of them. And when you're talking about treating the employee slash contractor with humanity, humanness, again, the manager brings their own humanness into the workplace. So if the manager has had a bad day and doesn't know about boundaries, what is the poor employee supposed to do if he gets picked on, he or she gets picked on because the manager, male or female, has had a bad night, has had a bad morning, has had a bad drive, has had a bad review from his superior, etc. So it's very complex. So when you're talking about, you know, discretionary effort and the leadership books, people need more of what you're talking about. People need more of what you're doing. They just do. They need to have this pyramid in front of them. They need to be, they need to see what doesn't work by not using this. If they don't follow the guidelines that you're giving them, what's not going to work in their company?
Oh, you've said so many things there that I've just got to respond to quickly.
Okay.
It's just like, what a treasure trove of things to say here. One of the reasons that it doesn't get down is that people think that you can give your vision, mission, value statements, whatever you want to do there once, and they get it. No. Mm-hmm. You just can't. You have to repeat them over and over to them. And then it is up to, just as you were referring to, it is up to the managers of their departments or their units or their team or whatever to set those same values and mission and statements and objectives. They have to know what the goals are and the objectives. And the reason why that's important is because people can be busy all day long. You either get that all day long. I can be cleaning out. I can be working on the email. I can be doing whatever. But I'm not moving the goals forward to the company. Or maybe I'm not even keeping that project on track, but I'm busy. And so what we want to do is rationally align them so they can see what they are doing on a daily basis and how it adds to what I'm, to what the manager wants or the leader wants. And when the leader is inspiring them, those employees will go beyond. And there's an interesting thing about discretionary effort that people don't understand much about it, because I heard overheard two managers talking, and one manager said, you can get her to give discretionary effort. She'll stay late on Thursday night if you just give her Friday night off. I just laughed inside. I said, that's not really discretionary effort. What we mean by discretionary effort is that you are using your thought process to add value. I'm using my creativity to help you solve problems. I'm using my ideas. I'm using the force of my personality to keep that customer involved and not lose that customer. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a little bit like going the extra mile, but usually going the extra mile is thought of as staying late, you know, on Thursday night or Friday night or whatever, coming in early, working the weekend, which, you know, only works slightly since you do talk about work-life balance. You can stay, you can work the weekend 1 week, but then the next week's dead. You used to buy your energy over the weekend.
For a manager of any type to say, you know, we'll just trade nights off is kind of, juvenile. It's just not even logical that someone who is in a manager capacity would speak like that. At least, you know, I would put them on the list that I would never talk to them again, because I could not I don't know how much time it would take to make a breakthrough to have them change their thought process. Because it's a big thing to take somebody who's been on this planet, let's say 2.5 to 4 decades, and change the way they think. It's for others, not just for themselves, but to benefit others. It's not an easy, process.
It's definitely, not easy. And I'm glad you brought that up, because in our book, at the end of every chapter, we have this little praxis statement, or a practice statement, a discretionary effort practice statement for you. Mm-hmm. And one of them is, I accept the present as it is. And another one deals with the gifts that people have. And what we mean by that is that you have to kind of change your thinking, because so many times managers would get overwhelmed, like, oh, we need more people, or we need more of this, we need more of that. And they don't understand to stop and say, you know, look at all the gifts these employees have. Look at all the strengths they have. We can use these strengths of these different employees, and we can solve this problem right now. That doesn't mean we don't need more in the future, but right now, at this time, we can solve this. And so we give them statements that they can think about as they go through. And another one relates to gratitude. Because I had a conversation with a new employee at a company one time, and I said, well, in your work life, how often did managers thank you? And this employee it was just like almost a minute. That may be an exaggeration, but he said, I can never remember a manager telling me thank you. And I thought that was tragic, because, well, there's two points to it. That's a touch point between the manager and the employee, the leader. And let's say the leader and the employee, because that's a leader's job, I think, to look them in the eye and say, I really appreciate the way you handled that customer. That was a great job. I've never seen such great research. Thank you for the detail on this report, because that will get you more discretionary effort than you ever dreamed.
And
just being grateful for what they do.
25 words or less, and that's pretty much, you know, what your statement was incorporated of. 25 words or less, and it costs them nothing. It's not even a minute.
Oh,
it's
right.
Barely seconds, and it'll buy them.
Right.
It'll buy them months, if not years, to the next step. And they don't get that.
Yes.
People never say thank you anymore.
I know. It's very sad. But people want to know, and that touch point between them, they want to know, am I valued? Do you like my work here? Because you don't want that fear in them. Like, oh, they don't really like this? Because then it puts you in this sort of frenzy, like, how do I perform up to their level they want? Now, we all can improve, but as long as you're saying thank you for that, when you get to this, or, and then you can talk about how you want to improve, or where you want to go on the next project, or what you want them to learn. Those are all things that you can do, but it starts with making them feel that you're grateful for what they do.
Well, you should be grateful for what they do. I thank everybody. You know, if I'm in a grocery store, I mean, not to pump myself up or anything, but I know that people don't get enough thank yous or appreciation in the world at all. And it's just become a habit with me to say thank you. I used to say nothing. I go through waves of either saying nothing or walking away or whatever. And then, you know, for the past several years, it's thank you when I'm in the grocery store, obviously when somebody holds the door open for me. Don't come to me when somebody tries to push me out of the way. That's what I'll be as calmly direct as possible about that. Before we get to the final statements, what I want to talk about is Carla Brandao's best website address is Earn the Gift. That's earnthegift.com. And on the on Carla's page on my website, every guest has their own podcast page. And I'm going to link a complimentary webinar that everyone can watch, and it is about confidence and charisma. And I'm not going to bother giving you all the words, because it doesn't matter. Just read it at the end. It'll also be on my Facebook podcast page. And you can connect with Carla Brandao on Twitter at Carla Brandao, K-A-R-L-A Brandao, B-R-A-N-D-A-U. on LinkedIn at Carla Brandao and on Facebook at Carla Brandao. And Carla also has a business page, excuse me, on Facebook called What's Going On With My Voice, Facebook.com/workplacepower. I live in an area that gets a significant amount of rain, but nobody ever believes how dry it really is up here.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Yes, it is. I will see what I can do. If I have to edit this out, I'll do that. Just that cough part. And what is your best line that you can give, line or two that you can give to the listeners today? We have, and I'm going to collate this and come up with your quotes and some of your content. We've got safety, social acceptance, rational alignment, and you threw in gratitude. And I don't know if gratitude is on your pyramid or what sticks first, but can you give a final statement to our listeners about discretionary effort?
I would love to.
Good.
Gratitude is down at the bottom with integrity, because we believe it's one of the most fundamental things that you can do to earn discretionary effort from your people. And the reason that discretionary effort is important in today's world is because during the late 90s, the early 2000s, everyone was talking about engagement. But what we have found is that engagement policies and practices and programs have become entitlements. And so when you're working with these, what is working in engagement, I would keep, but some of the things you can throw out, and you can replace it with these simple things that don't cost any money. Because telling people thank you, making them feel safe, accepting them as is, giving them reasons to grow, giving them meaningful work that they can, that will stretch their mind, rationally align them with what they're doing, and you will get emotional commitment. And one last statement is that it seems like every company, every organization is working with shrinking budgets but increased demand. And it's when and the managers feel that responsibility. So when the managers turn into leaders, they will be able to get more quality work out of their people and a higher quality work as they learn to create this discretionary effort environment. And that will help them meet the demands that are being made on them.
Absolutely. That's great. And that's perfect. And I want everybody to refer this podcast to their desk mates, to their friends, to all coworkers, to everyone that they know, because it's the only way to get Carla Brandao's word out. Again, the title of her book is called How to Earn the Gift of Discretionary Effort. It sounds like a book I want to read and add to my growing library. Her website address is Earn the Gift. And I also want to remind everybody to go to my website and get their free copy of The True Self Handbook, A Guide to Transform Your Life. And as I say, refer this podcast to everyone else you know. And remember, her name is Carla Brandao. Thanks, Carla, for being here today. I appreciate it.
You're most welcome.
Bye-bye.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Sanity Project Podcast. Please go to AskJoanneVictoria.com and continue the conversation on my podcast page. And get a free copy of my book, The True Self Handbook, A Guide to Transform Your Life. That's AskJoanneVictoria.com. Take care, and thanks for being here.